Today on the 21st show, Evanston in the Chicago suburbs has had a reparations program in place for a few years now. It's meant to make amends for decades of racist housing practices. But what has it accomplished? What are other cities taking away from Evanston's example? And what's keeping reparations from gaining greater traction nationwide?
Both of our political parties operate with the fundamental assumption that most white voters are racist. And so the way to avoid their ire is to not talk about racial justice issues.
We'll talk with the alderwoman who led the charge for reparations in Evanston, the leader of a group pushing for reparations in Champaign-Urbana, and a professor who's studying what people think of Evanston's policies. I'm Brian Mackey, and that's all coming up today on The 21st Show, which is a production of Illinois Public Media. But first, the news from NPR. From Illinois Public Media, this is The 21st Show. I'm Brian Mackey. Almost 3 years ago, Evanston, Illinois, in the Chicago suburbs, made national headlines when its city council approved what it called a reparations program. The idea was revenue from the city's tax on marijuana would go to a small number of its residents, to the tune of $25,000 each, which they would use for mortgage payments, home down payments, or home repairs. And as of earlier this year, there's a fourth option, a direct cash payment. So far, a few dozen families have been able to participate. All of this has been meant to make amends for decades of racist housing policies and practices, to say nothing of the many other systemic inequalities that African Americans face. We sent a text about this to our listeners. It was Tina in Joliet who summed up at least one argument for reparations. She said, quote, "America owes blacks and Native American Indians trillions of dollars. Black people have been oppressed and still are oppressed by a systematic government that has stolen everything from our ancestors. Blacks couldn't build wealth. We built the roads, harvested the crops, built the buildings, took care of the white children, all while not being compensated, and if so, very little. America and our government are a bunch of crooks." Thank you for sharing your perspective, Tina. It is true that African Americans, on average, are behind white Americans, on average, on a range of economic measures like income and wealth. That said, reparations remain controversial in America. According to Pew, just 30% of American adults favor reparations for the descendants of enslaved people. Even among Democrats and Democratic-leaning independents, it was about 50-50. There are also those who say what Evanston isn't doing doesn't even go far enough and really shouldn't even be called reparations. And yet, other cities in Illinois and around the country are looking to Evanston as a model. Robin Rue Simmons was an alderman in Evanston. She led the push for the reparations program there. Now she's the founder and executive director of a not-for-profit called First Repair, which, in the words of its website, informs local reparations nationally. Robin Rue Simmons, welcome back to the 21st Show.
Thank you.
The Champaign-Urbana Reparations Coalition formed in May of this year. As you might expect, it advocates for reparations at a local, state, and national levels. And in our studio is Jeff Trask, who chairs that group. He's also an adjunct professor in the College of Applied Health Sciences at the University of Illinois Urbana-Champaign. Jeff, welcome to you as well.
Thank you. Glad to be here.
And Alvin Tillery is director of Northwestern University's Center for the Study of Diversity and Democracy. He's also a professor of political science there, and he's leading a research collaborative which put out earlier this year the results of a survey looking at approval of the Evanston Reparations Program. We'll be talking about that as our conversation goes on. Professor Alvin Tillery, welcome back to the show to you as well.
Thanks for having me.
Listeners, in order to make all of our schedules meet, we taped this conversation last week. Because of that, we're not taking your calls live today, but we do always welcome your thoughts. I'm sure this will not be the last time we talk about this topic on our program, and what you say can and often does inform our coverage. The email address, talk@21stshow.org, talk@21stshow.org. All right, Jeff, I want to begin with you. In the News Gazette, the main newspaper in Champaign-Urbana, last month you published an essay that talked about making the case for reparations. Mm-hmm. I want to come back to the bigger themes there, but one thing you focus on a lot in the letter is the lasting effect of racist housing policies. From your research, talk about how those policies looked, how they worked.
Yeah, we actually have some pretty strong written documentation. In Champaign County, between 1941 and 1950, we had 774 parcels of land, 65 Rantoul, 50 near Savoy, and the rest in Champaign-Urbana that had specific language in it. And I'll just read it just to be word for word here. No part thereof will be sold or leased, either in whole or in part, to or permitted to be occupied as owner or tenant by any person or persons not of the Caucasian race. These type of covenants that they had for parcels of land led to, you know, what we all commonly know as redlining and only allowing Black people to live in certain areas. And so that's just one example of some of the things that have happened in Champaign County. One other quick example I'll share is that in 1951, Champaign built 70 public housing units for whites and 70 public housing units for Blacks. The housing units for whites, the two projects in total received the $1.4 million, but only 21% of that money went towards the housing project for Blacks. And again, there's many other examples of this type of housing discrimination and racial separation here, if you will. And it's just one example of why we need to have reparations here in Champaign County. There's a host of other things, but that's just one example.
You know, when you talk about Champaign County, you can't talk about it without mentioning the university. And Abby in Urbana sent us a text message pointing that out. She said, "I think it's long overdue. It doesn't shock me that a community like Evanston embraced and delivered this. I think saying and demonstrating, look, we wrong people, we need to try to make this right, goes a long way, more than just talk." And she went on to say, "The Champaign-Urbana area has its own history, tangled in the university's history. You can't tell CU history without acknowledging the barriers the university created. If Evanston can provide a basic model of a reparation program, perhaps other communities can adapt it to fit their needs and resources. It's a conversation worth having." Jeff, what do you have to say to Abby's message?
Well, there's definitely some truth to that. If you look at the historical record, the university housing refused to house Black students until about 1945. And then we also have the kind of the infamous Project 500 history, where the University of Illinois did a good thing in recruiting a number of African-American students to Champaign-Urbana, about 565 students, but they failed to provide adequate housing for them, and some were left without any housing at all. And then, of course, we had the incident in January 1968 where those students protested this fact, and 240-something got arrested for that protest due to some minor damage by 10 of the students to some furniture in the union, but 240-something students got arrested for that incident because they're all basically saying we need some place to live. And there was issues of, in terms of not many places in town were allowing Black students to live in different apartments and so on and so forth. And so, again, there's this history there, and we know there's lots of things to kind of make up for. So I think she's absolutely right.
Robin Rue Simmons, I want to bring you into the conversation now. Talk about the lasting effects of systemic racism in its many forms on Black communities in Illinois.
Well, the lasting effects speaks to our current conditions, our racial gaps that we have in every area of livability. The wealth gap is most often talked about, but we also have life expectancy gap and achievement gap. We have over-policing. And it was that data, that information that I was looking at in 2019 while I was serving on the Evanston City Council that really instigated me towards the revelation that reparations are due, not just for the crimes of the transatlantic slave trade, but also its vestiges and legacies that are still in practice in many ways in local government today.
Professor Alvin Tillery, I want to bring you in now because, you know, this question of reparations, it goes all the way back to the 1860s after slavery was abolished. I mean, ideas for reparations, for making amends for this world historical injustice, they've taken a lot of forms over the years. Can you talk about some of the most notable?
Yeah, I mean, it even goes even further than that. I mean, we had, formerly enslaved people writing to masters in the 18th and early 19th century saying, you know, hey, we're entitled to some compensation for our stolen wage hours. And so, you know, the most notable moment for reparations that lives in our consciousness is the field order that was issued by the Union generals related to the Sea Islands immediately at the end of the Civil War, where they were to be granted 40 acres and a mule so that they could be productive subsistence farmers. And that was promptly reversed under the Andrew Johnson administration. He was a Southerner, sympathetic to the slaveholders, and so he restored all of their property. But the notion of 40 acres and a mule lives very vividly in Black consciousness and in American culture as an idiom for what, as Robin so eloquently says, what is owed. And so, you know, moving into the civil rights era and the Black Power movement, talk of reparations by people like, you know, Marcus Garvey and Queen Mother Moore, and of course, John Conyers, who began introducing a bill calling for Congress to study the issue 40 years ago. And that fight is being kept alive now under the fight for H.R. 40. And so that is really the sort of broad historical sweep of what the movement has been about in a nutshell.
And I want to come back particularly to that fight in Congress over even being able to study reparations, which is just studying it has proven controversial. But let's talk a little about what's been happening in Evanston specifically. And Robin Rue Simmons, it's been a few years into it now. How do you think it's going? I mean, has it played out the way you envisioned it when you were pushing for this as an alderman?
Well, I am very proud of our city's audacity to take these first tangible steps, one that we can measure. And I just want to make a correction. We have disbursed 114 reparations direct benefits for a total of $2,873,000. $1,615,000 of that was in cash benefits. And so we are making progress. It's a new standard of legislating for the Black community, one that has inspired a national movement to organize for local reparations. But we're excited about the future. We are building on our progress. In 2019, we had only a resolution. Today, we have a fund, we have policy that has been programmed, and most importantly, we have been disbursing reparations. I would love for Professor Tillery to talk more about that survey, but before we get there, I'll say that taking that first step in Evanston has been important. We can measure wealth being created by $25,000 on direct benefits, but the support that has come from outside of the Black community, within the Black community, other institutions in town, specifically our local community foundation, the Evanston Community Foundation, our interfaith community, our school district, after many years of failed attempts to bring a school back to the Black community, passed with a previously having failed referendum, now is returning a school to the Black community. So these steps have been important in changing hearts and minds, building more support, and building a culture of repair in our community. So I'm not satisfied because we still have over $50,000 household income divide between Black and white Evanston. We remain a 13-year life expectancy gap. Policing still remains an issue in the Black community, but I am encouraged and very proud of our city for taking these steps, and over 100 cities that have also taken their first steps as well.
All right, well, Professor Alvin Tillery, your name was used in debate there. You led this group, I mentioned that put out a survey earlier this year about Evanston's reparations program. It was a collaboration, I think, between Northwestern and the University of Chicago. A few thousand Evanston residents were interviewed. What were your biggest takeaways, broadly speaking?
Yeah, so the collaborative is really between the city leaders of Evanston, including Alderman Simmons in her role as the chair of the Reparations Committee, the Northwestern Center for the Study of Diversity and Democracy, and our colleagues at NORC. We contracted with them to do the mail portion of the survey. And so we were able to survey about 3,600 Evanstonians, something on the order of 4.5% of the population, to have equal balance and distribution across all of the city's 9 wards, and very good ethnic distribution as well. And so we were absolutely thrilled with how the survey was conducted and unfurled. And we found really, really strong positive sentiment. Evanstonians like this program. 70% of Evanstonians who replied that identify as white support the program. About 64% of Black Evanstonians and about 63% of Asian and Latino Evanstonians all supported the program. These are the highest numbers of positive sentiment towards reparations that any survey done anywhere in the country has ever found. And I think that's a testament to the leadership of Alderman Simmons and our other city leaders that really laid the foundation for this with a more than year long public education campaign about the sort of racial harms that happened in Evanston and how they still mattered for people living in our city today.
Jeff Trask, in downstate Illinois, how do you see those results from Evanston? Do you think you'd see something similar if, I don't know, Peoria or Carbondale started up a program?
I believe so. We had a great event recently that Robin Rue Simmons was able to graciously attend for us here in Champaign. And we had about 200 people who were all positively favoring what was being talked about with between what Robin was saying, and our representative Carol Ammons was there as well sharing information. And so I think there's a real positive energy to move forward with something like this. And I think just like Evanston, the education piece is vital. It's one of the key things that our group is trying to emphasize, is why we had the event last month, is to try to educate the community about why this is important.
All right, we're going to have to take a break on the program here. When we come back, we will continue our conversation about reparations for African-American communities in Illinois. We're talking Evanston started a housing reparations program a few years ago. There are now other groups in the state that want to see something similar where they are. We're talking about this with Jeff Trask, who chairs the Champaign-Urbana Reparations Coalition, Alvin Tillery, director of Northwestern University's Center for the Study of Diversity and Democracy, also a professor of political science there, and Robin Rue Simmons, who was an Evanston alderman who led passage of the reparations program there. She now leads a nonprofit helping local reparations efforts across the country. In order to make our schedules meet, we taped this conversation last week. So if you have a thought to share, please get in touch with us by email. The address is talk@21stshow.org. talk@21stshow.org. More to come after a short break. This is the 21st Show. Stay with us. If you're just joining us, this is the 21st Show. I'm Brian Mackey. We're talking about the reparations program Evanston launched a few years ago. It's focused on housing and the history of discriminatory policies and practices there, redlining, as it's popularly known, and also making housing assistance payments and ultimately direct cash payments using money from the city's tax on the legalization of marijuana. We're talking about this with Jeff Trask. He's adjunct professor in the College of Applied Health Sciences at the University of Illinois Urbana-Champaign. But more to the point for our conversation, he chairs the Champaign-Urbana Reparations Coalition, which formed this year. Also, Robin Rue Simmons, who is an Evanston alderwoman who led passage of the reparations program there. She now leads a nonprofit helping local reparations efforts around the country. And Alvin Tillery, director of Northwestern University's Center for the Study of Diversity and Democracy, as well as professor of political science there. He led an effort to survey Evanstonians about what they think of the effort there. As a reminder, our program's on tape today. We tape this in advance in order to make our schedules meet, but you can always let us know what you thought by emailing talk@21stshow.org. All right, Robin Rue Simmons, I want to bring you back into the conversation because sticking with that survey that we were talking about before the break, the finding that really stuck out to me, as Professor Tillery mentioned, 70% of the white respondents said the Evanston reparations program is good public policy. That diverges pretty significantly from other surveys we've seen. There was a Pew report last year that found significantly lower support for reparations among white Americans, less than 20%. Now, I realize it's not exactly apples to apples because that was reparations for slavery, not redlining, but I wonder why you think there's such a vast difference in those numbers.
Well, the difference is because we are in practice. We've gone through extensive public education as a community and even as a city council. In 2019, Professor Al Tillery actually did a closed session training with the city council on racial discrimination, anti-Blackness in our city, and even more broadly, touching on the discrimination in the rollout of the GI Bill as an example. And so we were fully educated on the history of reparations, understanding that it is not novel. There's been many attempts at repair. And we learned about the legal frameworks for repair, the international approach to reparations, full repair or comprehensive reparations, five components. So together as a community, our white community included, learned about implicit bias and how unknowingly the white community might sustain these racial gaps through various actions. And so we spent time learning together, healing together. And once we implemented reparations, we heard from recipients. We heard from recipients that spoke to how they feel more trust for their government, how they feel more hope for the circumstances of their future generations of their families, how they have first felt seen and heard and appreciated and included in their community because of reparations. And then it supports our values. In Evanston on the city council at that time, we valued racial equity as a high priority. We had near 100 resolutions and proclamations in the names of Black lives and Black history. And it helped us reach our goals and values as a city. I believe that's why we are seeing the support from the white community. We have proven that it's not going to create a race riot, that it is not going to bankrupt our city, that there are ways to fund reparations. You mentioned cannabis sales tax as our initial funding mechanism. We have included an additional $10 million from graduated real estate transfer taxes as well. And in addition to that, we have a reparations fund at the city and an additional one that is primarily funded by our interfaith community, synagogues, temples, churches, and led by a Black-led organization, the Reparation Stakeholder Authority of Evanston. And so our ally community funded an additional $1 million in a pretty short period of time to be a partner to the municipal effort for reparations and be a partner that could sustain reparations beyond any type of political effort that we're seeing at the city.
Professor Alvin Tillery, I wonder if you... I'm going to try a hypothesis on you, which is the reason support for this is higher than the more general sense of reparations for enslaved people is because this is something in living memory, right? People can think, well, my parents or grandparents might have participated or benefited from this system as opposed to something where you have to go back a century and a half. What do you think of that idea?
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, that that's a very, very plausible hypothesis. I think that... the Jim Crow era inequalities are much more legible to a lot of people. They do remember them. They know that they continue to have an impact. I think that slavery, also people are aware that slavery does matter. We can see movement on that in surveys. But when you ask sort of white respondents about any of these policy priorities and kind of making a case for them, we see that abstract support from the standpoint of equality often runs counter to what they're willing to give up, right? So, you know, you might have a kind of racial equity initiative and you might say, okay, well, that means, you know, Latino immigrant children will pick first or Black children will get some benefit. And, you know, and people say, oh, well, we're not sure about that, right? And so, The missing ingredient often in these kinds of discussions is the why. Why are we doing this and how are we going to do that? And in Evanston, our leaders supplied that. They said very clearly that, you know, the local governments, previous administrations participated in these inequalities. And I think that struck with people's sense of, you know, what's the right thing to do morally. And I think that really explains the difference. And as we see these initiatives pop up around the country, supplying that why is probably the most important element. And it's a lot harder to do that with slavery than it is with the Jim Crow era inequalities.
Robin Rue Simmons, one of the other observations from the survey results, fewer Black respondents than white respondents said they supported the program. What do you make of that?
Well, reparations is complicated. And if you ask five different Black community members nationwide what forms of reparations they would like, you might get five different answers. And so I think that leading with housing may have given folks some pause if their priority was something else. One thing that we try to remind everyone is that this isn't a settlement. We're not done. This is a first step. Our legislation includes three other areas of repair, which we are working towards. And in addition to that, we hadn't yet added cash benefits as an option for receiving reparations benefits. So I do believe that now that we have dispersed reparations, more community members see that it's real, see that it is attainable, that their families are benefiting, that their neighbors are receiving redress, that the checks are being cut. And I do believe that if we were to go out for survey, that we would see that number increase as the community gains more trust in the program and the benefits being dispersed.
Jeff Trask, I also wanted to ask you about that finding as you've been working to build support through the Champaign-Urbana Reparations Coalition. What do you hear from people in Black communities in Champaign-Urbana, right? I mean, part of me wondered if it's like a distrust of government to fix the problem. What are you hearing out there?
Well, I think for a long time, a lot of people didn't think reparations was even a possibility, the same way we didn't think that we could have a Black president at one point in time. But then all of a sudden, President Obama won Iowa, and all of a sudden the eyebrows perked up and people started thinking, oh, wait a minute, this could actually take place. And I think to some degree, we're in the same kind of place with reparations, that for a long time, we didn't think it was any way possible this was going to happen. But now when we see what Evanston has done, we know, wait a minute, this is possible. And so I think it's going to take a little time for that to kind of sink in for even the population of African Americans, but I think it'll grow and people will start seeing not only you see that it's possible, but get involved and help make it happen.
Robin Rue Simmons, another thing I wanted to ask you about is this idea we've heard from time to time that Evanston's program maybe didn't go far enough. There was an alderman, Cicely Fleming from Evanston, quoted, I think it was in the Washington Post, this is a while back, but said, what's happening is people are starting to call any policy that might benefit Black people reparations. I heard from one city where they were just repairing streets and infrastructure in a Black community, and they were calling that reparations. That's not reparations. That's just good government. What do you think of that?
Well, so I do agree that it does not go far enough, and that's why we're doing the hard work and making progress. 10 million has turned into 20 million, and I'm looking for 100 million more. So that's a false debate. I'll also say that that's the same alderwoman that spoke very favorably about prioritizing housing as a form of redress. So it's a false debate that it's not enough. It's not. We recognize that this is a first step. We also recognize it's tangible, it's real, and it is, in fact, reparations. It is not ordinary public policy because it's come along with an acknowledgement of the harm, an apology for the harm, and a commitment to repair it, targeted specifically to the Black community. This is not equity. No one other than Black residents that experienced a direct harm from the city of Evanston and their descendants are eligible for this repair. It's been certified by NARC, the National African American Reparations Commission, as being reparations. In fact, I have, and different leaders from the city of Evanston have testified all across the nation, including the United Nations and other international spaces, as leaders in this work of repair. So it is not enough. It is, in fact, reparations, and it is a tangible first step, one that we should be building on. We should be getting more funds. We should be looking to repair in more areas. And as a Black community, we are harmed in so many different ways. And so that may also speak to some of the findings from the Black communities in the 60% range. We are harmed by police, we are harmed by our school districts, by our neighbors, by our natural environment, the built environment, by government. So the government has a long road ahead in gaining the trust of the Black community. And I'm committed, Professor Al Tillery is committed Jeff is committed. So many are committed. In fact, there was just 226 leaders from across the nation and even some international participants that joined our third annual reparation symposium for state and local government. And that included 76 unique local reparations initiatives. And so, yes, we have more work to do, and we're committed to doing it.
Professor Alvin Tillery, do you want to weigh in on this point that some people say, well, it either doesn't go far enough, or maybe people are just using the term reparations a little too loosely to describe good government?
Well, in the Black cultural idiom, we have an amen culture when we agree with something that's been said perfectly. And that's where I am with what Alderman Simmons just said. I mean, I think the argument that, you know, this is not reparations is inaccurate because it did come with an acknowledgement of government harm and an apology. I also think I've never been one to let the perfect be the enemy of the good. And so, I mean, I think our leaders in Evanston, they listen to the critics. You know, some say, well, you know, it's the federal government's job to do this, not localities. Well, okay, we'll be waiting for that forever. Or they say, oh, it's not enough money. We need $11 trillion to make Black people whole. Oh, okay, well, when are we going to get that with a $30 trillion national debt, right? And so, you know, I think every little drop in the bucket of making America more racially equitable society is important. And we've seen real positive change and feedback here in Evanston. And I'd like to keep that momentum. It doesn't mean that we're always going to have positive tenor on this program. But while we have it, let's keep up the hard work. And Alderman Simmons and our other city leaders are doing that. And as a resident of Evanston, I want to thank her for her extraordinary leadership in this moment.
Jeff Trask, I want to come back to you. What motivated you to get involved in the idea of pursuing reparations in Champaign-Urbana?
Sure. First of all, I'd like to second amen both what was said before. But yeah, there's a number of things that got me involved with this. Our church, New Covenant Fellowship, started a reparations committee within the church itself, and they asked me to chair that because they signed an anti-racism pledge as a faith community, as a church, and wanted to actually put some action behind that pledge. And so part of that action was to develop a reparations committee within the church. We've since then have had monthly educational opportunities to learn more about various historical and present conditions of African Americans. We've had webinars, we've had film screenings, we use Sunday mornings to educate people. And then out of that group was an outgrowth of our community group, where we just kind of advertised. You mentioned the News Gazette article. We got the word out. And there's a group of community folks, both faith-based, non-faith-based, all kind of people involved that see this as an important issue as well, and therefore are striving towards that. I'm looking at a map of Champaign-Urbana that has a population marked by colors, and you can see pretty distinctively that there are certain spots in our community where African Americans are concentrated. And when you look at those areas, you can also know that statistically, there's a lot of areas of disparities in those areas as well, in terms of health care and renting versus owning homes and businesses and banking versus predatory lenders and food deserts. You know, and so you can see the current ramifications of some of these issues in Champaign-Urbana pretty distinctively and statistically. And so I think that's one of the reasons why I want to get involved with this. And when you do your own homework and research, you come to the conclusion that the most that can be done is the least that can be done when it comes to reparations.
The most that can be done is the least that should be done.
Correct.
All right, we need to take another break on our program. If you're just joining us, it's the 21st show. We're talking about the idea of reparations for Black communities in Illinois, all stemming from the housing program that started in Evanston a couple of years ago. Now there are other groups across the state that want to see something similar happen where they are. We're talking about that with Jeff Trask of the Champaign-Urbana Reparations Coalition, Robin Rue Simmons, an Evanston alderman who led the passage of the reparations program there, now leads a nonprofit helping local reparations efforts across the country, and Alvin Tillery, director of Northwestern University's Center for the Study of Diversity and Democracy and a professor of political science. He's led a research effort into surveying Evanstonians about what they think about the program. We'll continue this conversation after a short break. This is the 21st show. Stay with us. If you're just joining us, this is the 21st show. We're talking about Evanston's reparations program for Black residents there based on the history of racist housing policies and practices, redlining, and how other communities in Illinois are now looking to emulate what Evanston did. We're talking about this with former Evanston Alderwoman Robin Ruth Simmons, who led the passage of the reparations program there and now leads a nonprofit called First Repair, which works to help other communities that want to pursue similar reparations programs. We're talking also with Professor Alvin Tillery of Northwestern University, who led a survey of Evanston residents about what they think about the reparations efforts there. And Jeff Trask, who chairs the Champaign-Urbana Reparations Coalition. In this last part of our show, I do want to address some of the arguments that are out there. We talked about low support nationally, especially among white people, for the idea of reparations, at least in the abstract. We did hear from some members of our texting group who were not enthusiastic about this. Christopher in Brimfield said, "I know injustice has been going on for a long time, but reparations would open up a Pandora's box, and where would it stop?" We also heard from Franny in Hinckley, who said, "I think reparations is a rather silly idea when we still live in a very racist society. Let's focus on making right now a kinder, gentler place to live." This kind of reminds me of what we were talking about a little bit earlier, of the idea of it's sort of sometimes this is seen as a zero sum game. And Jeff, I wonder if you want to respond to what they had to say.
There's a lot to unpack there. I'll just respond briefly. One of the things that I contend when it comes to prioritizing something like reparations, that when we get our bills from our homes and we look at our electric bill and our water bill, unless you're financially strapped, you usually look at those two bills and you don't plan on just paying one of them. You plan on paying both. And if we can change the paradigm about what reparations is, it's not an add-on, but it should be a very integral part of our structure to actually promote the type of society that one of the callers said we should have. Because I do believe that making a group of people whole after being oppressed for so long will create those communities that she's speaking of. And so if we could kind of change the paradigm to think that reparations is just an add-on to more of an essential element, not just for African Americans, but for the entire community. We all benefit when we build our communities up like that.
Professor Alvin Tillery, if any sort of reparations is ever going to happen in places that are not generally progressive in their politics, you're going to have to convince a lot of people. How do you make that case?
Well, I think as we're seeing play out with all of the book bans and the anti-DEI policies that are animating Republican politics in the red states, we have a heavy lift with educating people about the nature of the kinds of stark racial inequalities that result from the anti-Black history of our country. And the reality is, even if we do that, not everyone agrees that we should do anything about fixing that. And so, people respond to very well-documented, narrowly tailored, thoughtfully crafted solutions like the ones that the Evanston leadership put forward. And I always try to tell activists, I think Alderman Simmons has a great idea. It's a first step to get the ball rolling that can change an entire discourse in a community. And that's what we've seen happen in Evanston. So start with what you can achieve and build out from there. And I think that's what we have to do with this local reparations movement.
Can you talk, you touched on this earlier, Professor Tillery, this idea of even studying reparations at the national level has been met with roadblocks in the U.S. House of Representatives. Can you briefly remind us what's happened there?
Yes. Well, for 40 years, Congressman John Conyers was introducing the bill to get a national commission to study reparations for Black Americans. That would have been the companion of what we had with the study of the issue under the passage of the Civil Rights Act of 1988 for Japanese Americans, but a much more, the Japanese American panel was much more narrowly focused and short-lived. And so that has not moved forward in large part because the Democratic Party is always afraid that talking about racial justice will lead to the abandonment of white swing voters, and they'll lose to Republicans who, demagogue on these issues, as we see Governor DeSantis doing over, teaching Black history the AP history exam, African-American history exam. And so they're afraid that they're going to lose voters. They still believe that these kinds of Reagan Democrats are out there. I always try to tell them those people are actually Republican voters and they're not coming back, and that you might actually gain voters by adopting racial justice policies. But both of our political parties operate with the fundamental assumption that most white voters are racist. And so the way to avoid their ire is to not talk about racial justice issues. And so that's why it doesn't move forward. That's why it will not move forward, even if we get a Black Speaker of the House in the next electoral cycle, which there's a very good chance we will. I don't expect it to move forward because the party at the national level is nervous about these conversations.
Former Alderman Robin Rue Simmons, is that something you had to reckon with in Evanston? Any opposition or people saying, ooh, are we going too fast? Are we going too far?
No, we didn't have that debate. We had legitimate concerns. How do we fund it? How are we protected legally, knowing that there will be legal challenges? And in fact, we did have legal challenges from conservative groups outside of our community. And we had, as Professor Tillery mentioned, a very narrowly tailored legal framework that is solid and one that has been challenged, and we're moving forward without issue. So we had some legitimate debates, but we didn't have as much of the partisan argument that plays out on a national scale. We have a nonpartisan form of government in Evanston, but a very Democrat and progressive community. So that was not our debate. The challenges were, how do we operationalize it? How do we implement it? How do we fund it? And we, together as a community, came up with solutions for those challenges.
Jeff Trask, what about in Champaign-Urbana? The county has been trending Democratic, so maybe this won't be an issue there either. But I mean, it's still certainly a blue island in a red sea if you go beyond, too far beyond the city limits of Champaign and Urbana.
Sure. And, but there is some hope there. City of Urbana, February 2021, actually wrote a anti-racism resolution, kind of reaction to the George Floyd incident. And so we have kind of a foundation of people who want to be anti-racist, who want to show equity in our area. And just from the short-lived time of our committee, we've seen a number of people join our meetings each month, and we had a very large event that took place last month. I know there's lots of opposition, there's lots of fear, trepidation when it comes to talking about the word reparations. But I do believe there's a surge of energy of people who really do want to investigate this, to learn more about it, and ultimately do something.
Robin Rue Simmons, so you're leading this group now that works with, aims to work with other communities that want to pursue that. I wonder if there are where you're hearing from in Illinois, around the country, any places that surprised you, maybe?
No surprises. I would say that we have the most of the activity is in the Midwest, and there is great activity happening on the West Coast. I'm sure you've heard of the California Task Force and their 1,100-page report with recommendations and proposals for reparations. San Francisco is doing some incredible work with very ambitious commitment for reparations in the form of cash payments, as well as dozens of other types of reparations. So we're seeing activity all across the nation in every region. At First Repair, we actually have a monthly strategy session that has grown so that we now have to have regional monthly breakout sessions. And so there's activity happening in Miami-Dade County, in South Fulton County, Georgia. New York State is next up as a state to introduce, or has already introduced, our own state. Illinois has a reparations task force, which is being appointed by the governor, already has a chair, Marvin Slaughter, in fact. And so we're seeing activity all across the nation in municipalities, counties, and even at a state level. We're also seeing quite a bit of activity within institutions, in church or houses of worship and denominations, as well as the academy is doing more. Harvard made a $100 million initial commitment for reparations, and there are others that are following in suit of Harvard as an academy that is committed to reparations.
As we're coming to the end of our time together, a little less than 5 minutes remaining, I want to ask each of you what you see as the end point for this. What will be your barometer in 10 years, 20 years, to see how successful these efforts have been? And Jeff Trask, I'll start with you.
Sure. Thank you for this time to share. I would say that it would not really be an end point. It'll be a part of our life on an ongoing basis, like a journey versus a destination. And it'll be something where we're constantly looking at ways of how do we repair the damage that was done in so many different areas, for Black people over the years. And that it'll just be an ongoing process, and that our policies, our resources, our time and energy will all kind of incorporate what does it mean to be equitable, what it means to repair the damage that was done on an ongoing basis. Because trust me, there is so much work to do. 5, 10, 20 years, we'd be scratching the surface to moving this along. So I think it's a journey versus a destination.
Robin Rue Simmons, same question. What will you see as success 10, 20 years down the line?
Amen to Jeff. But I would add that our North Star as localities is that there is a federal bill for reparations. H.R. 40 was introduced in 1989. It's languished in Congress since. It did pass judiciary a couple of years ago, but we are hopeful for a federal response, because it will take that. Localities, even all of us together, we simply don't have the capacity to address the harm worthy of reparations, but we are doing our part and we won't let that stop us. I do believe, as Jeff said, that really living a life of repair is important, so much so that we have a toolkit at firstrepair.org that speaks to how to be an ally and how to live a life of repair. I understand this is a life commitment that my children and their children will be fighting for the repair in the Black community, being that we are fighting to repair 400 years of harm and crime and trauma against the Black community.
Professor Alvin Tillery, final thoughts, 10, 20 years down the line, what will success look like?
Well, I mean, I agree with everything that my two colleagues have just said. I just want to stress the urgency of now. I just want to stress that, yes, while we can strategize for 10, 20 years down the line, if we don't make some really strong decisions and moves in places where Black people have power and where the people in power depend on us right now, then this movement is not going to be around in 10 or 20 years. And what do I mean by that? I mean that this election cycle in 2024 is absolutely critical for us to get racial equity agenda items and reparations before the people that claim to represent our interests, to get them embedded in those structures so that we have a chance to keep this movement alive for 10 or 20 years.
Alvin Tillery is director of the Center for the Study of Diversity and Democracy, as well as a professor of political science at Northwestern University. We've also been speaking with Jeff Trask, adjunct professor at the University of Illinois Urbana-Champaign and chair of the Champaign-Urbana Reparations Coalition, and Robin Rue Simmons, former Evanston alderwoman and founder and executive director of the organization First Repair. Thank you all so much for being with us today on the 21st Show.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
And that's all the time we have for our show today. Before we go, will you consider joining our texting group? We heard from people during the show today. It's especially helpful on these shows when we have to tape ahead of time and we can't take calls live. It still lets you have your voice heard, putting the public in public radio. You can join our texting group by sending the word TALK, T-A-L-K, to 217-803-0730. Again, send the word TALK to 217-803-0730. You can find that number as well as our email address, our voicemail line, every other way to contact us. It's all on our website, which is 21stshow.org. That's 21stshow.org. We've also got our past programs there, and you can find links to subscribe to our podcasts, or just look us up on Apple or Spotify or wherever you listen. The 21st Show is produced by Christine Hatfield, Kennedy Vincent, and Jose Zepeda. Technical direction and engineering comes from Jason Croft and Steve Mork. Reginald Hardwick is our news director. The 21st Show is a production of Illinois Public Media. I'm Brian Mackey. Thanks for listening. We'll talk with you again tomorrow.